You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including why some Northern California fishermen are unhappy with how the state has reopened salmon fishing, and why Josephine County commissioners won't allow a couple to leave the library district. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And I'm Roman Battaglia, science, environment, and politics reporter.
So, Justin, you had a story about the return of salmon fishing off the California coast. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so there's basically been a ban on most commercial and recreational Chinook salmon fishing off California's coast for the last 3 years, and that was to help populations recover after they were really devastated by drought some years ago in California. Of course, we haven't had a wet winter this year, so I was wondering why you're allowed to fish now. But I spoke with someone with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and he said it said something interesting. Basically, that these salmon are on sort of a 3-year cycle. So from hatching and traveling down freshwater rivers to the ocean, that's around 3 years. And so this ban looked at years prior, which were very rough for the salmon. But they seem to be recovering, and that's really hopeful news. The state has tried really hard to save these species. You had the Klamath Dam removals. You had a lot of hatchery infrastructure built. A lot of regulations like this ban on commercial fishing. And according to officials, that, you know, those efforts seem to be working. So the Pacific Fishery Management Council, which decides these things, drafted a plan, and that's expected to be approved here soon by the federal government to finally allow again commercial and recreational fishing off the coast.
Well, that just sounds like great news for the fishermen, Justin. Am I right about that?
Yeah, well, you can only imagine how devastating this ban was to commercial fishing. So they were really celebrating, and that was sort of the opinion I assumed I would get when I called a harbor in our coverage area, but that's not what I heard. So, you know, which further drives home the point about how important it is to actually speak with those impacted by policy, which we really try to do. We try to get personal stories and not only talk to officials. Because I spoke with this harbor commissioner in Crescent City, and he said this ban on commercial fishing actually hadn't been lifted for them in other areas in the far northern coast. And that point really wasn't made clear in the press releases we received about this lifting of the ban. So because this region is near outlets for important rivers that the Chinook salmon use, it has special regulations. Here's Rick Shepard, a Crescent City Harbor District Commissioner that I spoke with.
To the harbor and to the community, the entire community of Crescent City, because at one time, one of the largest revenues for the harbor and for our community was salmon fishing. And we're sitting here, it's a vacant parking lot in my harbor, a total vacant parking lot. Nobody's here.
So yeah, he was speaking from the Crescent City Harbor District, which if you go to, yeah, there's a lack of businesses and it is kind of just a big parking lot right now. He said that morning he had actually gone to Brookings just across the border in Oregon and caught his limit of salmon. And he was just taken aback by not only how many fish were there to catch, but also the people. There were a lot of tourists visiting restaurants. There was a lot of economic activity going on. And you can really hear how frustrating that is, that his harbor can't see similar outcomes.
So this ban has only been lifted for certain areas of the California coast.
Right. Sport fishermen out of Crescent City will be allowed to catch around near 4,000 Chinook salmon this summer. Shepard said that's not a lot. They'll reach that limit in about a week probably. And commercial fishing is allowed basically below Point Arena in Mendocino County. So that ban still applies to Crescent City and Eureka, so Humboldt and Del Norte counties. So there's good news for a lot of fishermen, especially in Central California, but those in Del Norte and Humboldt still don't have a relief, and just know that these communities, you know, they really need some more economic opportunities at this point.
Okay, well, thank you, Justin. Roman, you reported on another attempt by a couple in Grants Pass to leave the Josephine County Community Library District. First of all, why do they want to leave?
Yeah, so there's this couple, Mike and Winnie Pelfrey, who live in Grants Pass. They've wanted to opt their property out of this district for quite a while. The library district was created in 2017 after the county shut off funding for the libraries in 2007. So there was this like grassroots effort. They got enough money to get them back open in 2009, and then they were finally able to create this permanent taxing district to support the libraries. Right now, that tax is 39 cents per $1,000 of assessed property value a year for people. So the Pelfreys submitted this petition to opt out of the library district. Mike Pelfrey basically said that they don't use the library and they don't plan on using it in the future, so they don't want to pay for it. He said that there are, you know, safety and environmental concerns that means he doesn't receive enough benefit from the library.
Wait, safety and environmental concerns. What's his argument there?
That was basically his, like, shorthand or nice way of saying that he doesn't like the homeless people using the library. I mean, he went into the homeless people stuff, and then he also complained about activist groups like Indivisible renting library spaces to prepare for protests, and says that this shouldn't be what a library is. It should be for reading books and gaining knowledge. He also says that he pays too much taxes for the library and that he believes others do too. The district charges out-of-district residents $60 a year for a library card, which they say on their website is what is typical to what people would pay in taxes. Mike Pelfrey paid $116 in taxes last year to the library district, and then I checked their property records, and their property is assessed at around $360,000. And so then I talked to the county assessor's office, and the average assessed value of a home in the county is only around $240,000. So it's a lot less than Pelfrey's, which would make sense why they're paying more. But when I was looking and trying to do the math, a home assessed at $240,000 would still pay around $90, $95 a year in taxes, which is more than $60.
Yeah.
You know, but that also, I don't know how much the average is for the district itself. It's not the entire county. It's just like it's sort of very – I guess gerrymandered or something.
Yeah.
It's like a very specific group of properties for this district.
So the Pelfreys have tried to leave the library district before. What happened back then?
Yeah, so back in 2023, they originally submitted a petition to opt out of the district. And at that time, two out of the three commissioners approved the petition, but then the library district took them to court. And then ultimately, the commissioners withdrew that approval on procedural grounds that it wasn't done properly. So they then revised the opt-out process. They now require you to have to get 100 signatures from the community before commissioners can consider the petition. And since then, too, all of the commissioners on the board have been replaced. And now the Pelfreys have tried again through this new petition process. And there was a hearing on Wednesday with the county commissioners.
So what happened this time?
So basically, and I think this is important to know about this process, is to opt out of a district. The state law says that there is only one way to do that, and you just have to prove that you can't feasibly receive that service. So like if you're part of an irrigation district and you can't actually access the water from that district, then you could opt out. So the Pelfreys have to prove that they can't feasibly receive library services. And compared to something like maybe a fire district or the irrigation district, that's a lot harder to do.
And so why exactly couldn't the Pelfreys prove that?
Yeah, there are a couple reasons. And some, you know, supporter of the library talked about this because, I mean, one, the Pelfreys live less than 2 miles from the Grants Pass Library. It's a 6-minute drive, so it's not like they're out in the boonies somewhere. You know, the library also has services available online as well, even if you don't live near one of the libraries. The supporters of the district pointed out that, you know, if a new family moved into the Pelfreys' house, they could just as easily access library services. The Pelfreys just don't want to use the library, which isn't a reason you can opt out of a district. Because one public speaker pointed out, if that was a reason, that would sort of open up this Pandora's box to opt out of other districts. She said she doesn't have kids, so why should she pay into the school district or RCC? Or she doesn't commit crimes or plan on going to jail, so why should she pay for the law enforcement district? All sorts of, you know, different reasons. The library's district's own lawyer even during the hearing said he doesn't use the library either, and he would like to opt out too if he could. Who likes to pay taxes? But the law clearly says that you can't do that.
An interesting argument from
the
lawyer.
I know. It was very interesting. But commissioners this time voted unanimously to deny the petition. They basically said that we're tied. The state law says you can only base this on feasibility, and it's very clear about that.
And so what's next?
So Mike Pelfrey, after he did say that he would now consider gathering signatures to try and dissolve the library district entirely. So we'll kind of see if he actually moves forward with that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Roman. Justin, you had a story on a fuels reduction project in Josephine County. Remind us, what is fuels reduction?
So this is the removal of trees and brush and things that can be fuel for wildfire. And so federal agencies, with the help of private contractors in our region, will go into an area and remove those fuels. In this area, they cut down trees that were smaller than a certain diameter, I think 8-inch diameter, so leaving the larger trees that can better withstand wildfire. And the hope is that if a fire does start, it won't grow as big or as hot. We've been seeing more of those big, hot wildfires in southern Oregon. And experts think that's because we have these forests that are really overgrown. So they haven't been logged in a while. Fires have been put out very quickly, so you don't get some of that natural cleaning of these fuels. This project I visited was a Bureau of Land Management project, and they had Grayback Forestry, which is one of the larger contractors in our area, doing that clearing.
And why was this area chosen for fuels reduction?
This was in the Cathedral Hills Trail System in Grants Pass. So first, it has a lot of use. People use these trails quite often, so there's a greater chance of human-caused fire. It's also close to a lot of homes. It's kind of surrounded by these neighborhoods. So if a fire started, the chance of structures going up is pretty high. And you can imagine that the BLM and the Forest Service has a long list of fuels reduction projects in the state. And they can't do it all because they don't have unlimited funding. So they're really trying to prioritize those near communities like this place. Someone at BLM told me that Southwest Oregon has 22 out of the top 50 communities most at risk for wildfire. The homeowners near this trail system are also part of the FireWise network. That's an initiative which brings residents together to mitigate fire risks on their properties, like creating defensible space.
Okay, well, thanks, Justin. Right now, we're going to switch modes a little bit and ask you to support the work you just heard, the work that Justin and Roman and our other reporters do every single day here at JPR. And give us a call, 1-888-552-6191, or go online to ijpr.org/support and fund what you've been hearing. Fund the work that both Roman, Justin, and myself are doing every day to bring you the news. And, you know, I think every single fund drive we say, like, it's more important now than ever. But, you know, we have lost federal funding. That's a hit to our bottom line. And we've had a lot of people really be generous and step up on our last fund drive. And, you know, we need to continue that support. Yeah. We need to keep that going to make sure we can continue to replace that money. If that's something you can help us with, give us a call, 1-888-552-6191, online, ijpr.org/support.
Yeah, I mean, we cover, like, a really large area. We're covering all of Southern Oregon and Northern California. We just heard about a couple of stories in Del Norte on the Northern California coast and in Josephine County, but there's so many other places that we cover. And, you know, we have a small news team, and it can make it really difficult. And having the support from, you know, the public really shows that they're willing to invest in this media. We have just recently reported about one newspaper in Roseburg shutting down. So, you know, the news media landscape
here. Another
reason
your support is needed now more than ever.
We're kind of needed to be there to step in and fill in those gaps in the news desert here. We often get a lot of letters of support from people about, you know, these smaller communities that we cover that don't have news media and don't have that coverage. And so people don't necessarily know what's going on in their community, and that's why we're here. And so supporting us helps the news team be able to do all of that work.
And Justin, how can people give that support? How can they make that happen?
Well, a thing that we really like and is really easy is becoming a sustaining member. So monthly giving, and you can set up that very easily, and it's automatic, and you can kind of forget about that. And then also we like to mention that even if you're a sustaining member, if something changes or you see a story that you really enjoyed, you can always give us more during the spring or during our fund drives. That can work too. You don't only have to be a sustaining member.
We love extra gifts here.
Yes.
And the number you would do that at is 1-888-552-6191. That's 1-888-552-6191, or go online to ijpr.org/support. And that's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's also on our website, ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform. Don't go away. Up next, how archaeologists and tribal members are teaming up to support elk conservation.